It is December the 4th, and we are in Parashas Tazria. We're on page 608. Bottom of the page, Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13. Here we begin the discussion of Tzaraas, of one who gets Tzaraas. Now I want to give a general introduction to Tzaraas before we begin over here, and how it's going to work. There are various forms of Tzaraas. I think that it is fairly well known that a person can get Tzaraas on their body, a person can get Tzaraas on their clothing, and a person can get Tzaraas on their house. Three different forms of Tzaraas. And the Torah will discuss, of course, all three types. We'll begin with a person's body, then later in the parasha, at the very end of the parasha actually, it'll discuss clothing, and then in the next parasha, in Parashas Metzora, it'll discuss getting it on the house, on the building. Tzaraas is, at least let's talk here about getting it on one's body rather than on the clothing and on the house. Clothing and house is obviously an unusual event. The tzaraas on a person's body is a skin disease. It is something that goes wrong with a person's skin. Tzaraas was translated sometimes as leprosy because leprosy is a skin disease. So it's some sort of a skin disease. Now, tzaraas that we're going to talk about here in the Torah is going to be something that's going to make a person tame. And the focus of the Torah is not going to be about the person's physical well-being, their physical health. The Torah is going to speak strictly about the person's tahara and tuma. Are they pure or are they impure? Because this particular skin disease brings with it tuma if it happens in a particular way. So if a person has other types of skin diseases, it doesn't make a person tame. There are all kinds of skin problems, and it doesn't make a person tame. But this one will make a person tame. But even when it makes a person tame, it's only when the disease takes a certain form. We're going to learn as we go through that there's a difference between tzaraas that appears on an area of the body that is just an area of skin, and an area of the body that is an area that normally has hair. It's different. An area of the body that has a wound or a burn. Those are going to be different. The rules for what constitutes tzaraas and what doesn't are going to be different. Even when a person gets tzaraas and the Kohen will determine that the person is not tamei, but they still have skin disease, the skin is still affected. Just because the Torah says that with this particular type of details and circumstances, the person is not tamei, but there still is a disease. It's still there. Tzaraas, as a skin disease, can be painful, can be uncomfortable, it can be something that is very bothersome to a person. But the tuma and the tahara is going to follow very specific details. Is tzaraas contagious? As a skin disease, is it contagious? Well, the Gemara in Maseches Ksubos implies that, in fact, it might be contagious. It might have some element of being contagious. Maybe not all types of tzaraas, but some of them might. And the Gemara actually praises one of the Talmidei Chachamim who was willing to learn with those who had tzaraas. It's not referring to those who were tameh with tzaraas, but those who had the skin disease of tzaraas, and he was willing to learn with them, even though others stayed away for fear of contracting the disease. We know, for example, that we do not eat meat and fish together. We Jews don't eat meat and fish together. We eat either meat and then fish, or fish and then meat. It's not like milk and meat, where we don't eat milk after meat for 6 hours. Here, we can switch back and forth between meat and fish multiple times in a meal. That would be perfectly fine. But we don't eat them together. Why don't we eat them together? There's some sakana involved. There's some danger involved. A physical health danger in having meat and fish together. What many people don't realize is what the Gemara says is that meat and fish is kasha ledavar acher. It is dangerous because it could give a person saras. That's what it's dangerous for. It's dangerous to give a person saras. Obviously, it doesn't mean to make a person tummy with saras for two reasons. First of all, we today don't get the tumma and tara of saras. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and the rules that govern saras for tumma and tara do not apply to us today. But the other reason why eating meat and fish couldn't give a person saras to become tame is because, as we're going to explain, saras is a disease that makes a person tame as a punishment for various averos. We know that the primary one is lashon hara, although it's not the only one. But lashon hara is associated with getting saras. Eating meat and fish is not an avera. Therefore, that a person should get the biblical disease that makes a person tame because they eat meat and fish, that doesn't seem to make sense. But there, as we're saying, saras is not only something that makes a person tame, it also is something that is a skin disease. And again, as we mentioned before, just because a person may not be tame doesn't mean that they have no disease on their skin. We know that Miriam, we'll learn it later on, Mitzvah Hashem, when we get to Sefer Bamidbar, Miriam is going to get saras. Why is she going to get saras? For speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. So she will have saras. When she gets saras, then they're going to wait. They're not going to travel. They're going to wait for her to become tahar. How long will it take for her to become tahar? It'll take 7 days, and she'll become tahar. And then the Jews will travel, because she's tahar. So most people read that story and say, okay, she got saras. She was thrown out of the camp for 7 days because she had saras. Then she became tahar. She came back into the camp. It's all over. But it wasn't all over. She was tahar, but she had a debilitating skin disease that continued for many years. It affected her appearance, and it affected her ability to function. She had saras. Even though she was tahar, she wasn't tameh, but her skin was very drastically affected. Later on, a miracle would happen, and her skin would go back to becoming beautiful again. But getting saras does not necessarily end with the person being admitted back into the camp because they've become tahar, because it is still a disease. And a disease can affect a person for a long time, depending on the person. When Naaman, the non-Jewish general, comes to the Navi Elisha, and it's in order to heal his saras, he's not coming because he's tamei. He's coming because he has a terrible skin disease. It's in Sefer Malachim. For those of you who attend Wednesday night shir, we'll learn about it in Mirtzah Hashem, that he's going to have saras, and he's going to come to Elisha to get healed, and Elisha will tell him how to get healed. But that's talking about a physical malady. It's not discussing the tumah and the tara. So whenever we mention saras, it should be noted that there are two things going on. There's the physical problem. For that, you see a doctor. It's a physical problem. But there's also the element of tumah and tara, and that's what the Torah is focusing on, is the tumah and tara aspect, not the physical disease part of it. But it can be there as well. Saras on clothing and on a house. So again, there we're not talking about a disease. However, it does deform the clothing and it does deform the house. So even if it does not have the parameters for which the item will be tamei, meaning the clothing may not be tamei, the house may not be tamei, but that doesn't take away from the fact that the clothing is deformed. You might not want to wear it. The house is deformed. You might be embarrassed having guests over because there is this growth on the clothing or on the house. But it doesn't necessarily carry with it tumma. The tumma is going to be based on very specific details, which we're going to learn about. So always bear in mind you have two parts to tzaras, the tumma and the tara, and the physical part of it as well. Any questions on that?
Was Miriam the only one who spoke or kept She's the only one who got tzaras that we know of. Others may have spoken, but she's the only one who got tzaras that we know of. Didn't get tzaras.
That's very serious. I mean, just to be, you know, from the camp for 7 days. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to learn about that. We'll learn about that mitzvah Hashem in Bamidbar. When we get to that story, we'll get to it.
A year or so. Wow. I mean, that's really serious.
Yeah. Okay. So, Perek Yud-Gimel, chapter 13. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron le'mor. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron, saying, Adam kiyeh v'or b'saro, a man that will be in the skin of his flesh, se'es osapachas ovaheras. I bet they don't translate those things.
No.
They do not. Those are three names. Seis, Sapachas, and Baheres are names for three different appearances of Tzaras. There are various shades of white. The Mishnah in Maseches Negaim discusses the various shades of white for Tzaras. White as snow, white as the wool of sheep, the various white or off-white that is discussed in the Mishnayos. These are three different shades of white that are being mentioned. But either way, it's a white splotch on the skin. So it will be on the flesh, on the skin of his flesh, for an affliction of Taras. He shall be brought to Aaron the Kohen, or to one of his sons, the Kohanim. So the Torah tells us, Taras is administered only by the Kohanim. Cannot be administered by anybody else. Any other Torah sage would not qualify. Moshe Rabbeinu does not qualify. Tzaraas can only be administered by the Kohen. Only the Kohen can either pronounce it as Tzaraas or pronounce it as not being Tzaraas. That's only the Kohen can do that. V'ra'ah Kohen es ha'nega v'ra basar, and the Kohen will see the blemish, how do they call it?
Affliction,
okay, in the skin of the flesh, and the hair in the affliction will turn white, and the appearance of the affliction is deeper than the appearance of the flesh, of the skin of the flesh, which means when you look at it, it looks like it is deeper. If that is the case, Negat Tzaras, who it is an affliction of Tzaras, Vira'ohu HaKohen, the Kohen will see it, V'timei Oso, and he will say that it is Tamei. He will pronounce it as Tamei. The Gemara says, Rashi calls our attention to it, the Mishnah says, that when you look at you look outside on a sunny day, and you see an area of shade, in an area of sun. So because of the area of sun is a much brighter color, it looks like the area of sun is deeper than the shade. Meaning it looks like the shade is sitting on top of the area of sun. Even though really it's the reverse. And we know that really the shade is caused because there's something blocking the sun. It's not that the shade is sitting on top of the sun, of the sunny area, but when you look at it, that's what it looks like because of the relative, the contrast in color. The brighter one looks like it's lower than the darker one. The one with the shade looks like it's sitting on top of the brighter one. If you look at it next time you see a sunny day, look outside, you'll see that is what it appears to be. So here as well, that the whiteness of the skin makes it appear like that area of the skin is actually lower, is deeper than the regular colored skin. So that is one of the signs of tumah, of impurity. And here the Torah tells us that in addition to the white skin, there's also hair in the skin, in that area, that blotch, that has turned white. In order for tzaras, in order for the tzaras to be tamei, in addition to the whiteness, there has to be something else as well. And the first something else that the Torah is mentioning is that the hair in that blotch of white also turns white.
An obvious question is, what if all of the hair on the person is white?
It was white, right. So that, it appears from the way the Torah says it, it would seem to be that that would not make the person tummy, because it says hafach lavan, it turned white.
But I mean, there's no way to tell us
right.
That is a sign or not
right.
A sign.
Right, so it seems that it would not be, because if the hair was already white before, then,
yeah.
Right. But we'll learn later, there are other signs of tumah besides that.
Okay.
Now, in this particular formulation, there's a blotch of white, and the hair in the blotch turned white. That is an immediate tumah. Until the kohen pronounces the person as tumah, they're not tumah. Now, this is a fascinating thing, because other types of tumah, let's say that I come in contact with a dead animal, but I don't realize that I came in contact with a dead animal, or I didn't know that coming in contact with a dead animal makes me tamei. I didn't know that. Then I go about my business and I touch karbanos and I touch truma, and then later somebody comes and says that for the past 2 hours I've been tamei. I didn't know it. Well, then, whatever I touched over the past 2 hours is tamei. I didn't realize that it was tamei, but I made it tamei. We have to retrace my steps, think about where I was, what did I do, and whatever I came in contact with during those 2 hours is now tamei. But with tzaraas, that's not the way it works. Person has a blotch, and it's, the hair turned white, but the kohen hasn't said anything yet. Then, an hour later, the kohen comes to the house, says, oh, you're a tameh. The tumah starts now. When the kohen pronounces him as tameh, that's when the tumah begins.
Is that where you use the expression when administers?
That's right.
Versus diagnose.
Right. It's more than diagnose. That's right. He's not just a doctor diagnosing. A doctor, when he diagnoses someone, God forbid, as being sick, the sickness didn't begin then. The sickness was from before, and then now the doctor identifies it. But here, the Kohen is actually pronouncing it as tzaraas, and he's the only one who can pronounce it as not being tzaraas either. Later. Right. Yeah.
You said he's the one who would later... Could one go to a different Kohen
yes.
later?
Yes, it doesn't have to be the same Kohen. Yeah, yeah. It has to be a Kohen, but it can be a different Kohen. Yes. Yeah.
So if you're suspecting that you could be Tomei, is it better just to sit there and not do anything until the
Kohen comes? Well, we'll learn later that you should definitely make this situation such that, assuming that you are Tomei, the fewest things possible will become tummy because of you. So we're going to learn later, for example, with a person's house, that you want to take the furniture out of the house before the kohen comes. So we'll learn about that later on. Now, there are two different stages of tumah for tzaraas. I'm going to use the Hebrew terminology so you have it, and then I'll translate it, of course, but you should know the terminology, because it's the way that the Torah refers to it, and the terminology itself will also explain what it means. So the first one is muskar. I'm going to transliterate it. Mitzora Muskar. That's the first stage. Then there's Muchlat. Muskar, Muchlat. Those are the two stages of Tumah for Tzaras. Muskar comes from the word Sagur. Anybody know what the word Sagur means? Lisgor et Hadelet. To close. It's a modern Hebrew word. Lisgor et Hadelet means close the door. Musgar means a mitzora, someone who has Tzaras, who has been closed up, been locked up, or quarantined. Musgar. Muchlat means that the Tzaras is, let's go ahead and translate this word. Muchlat means this is going to sound a little harsh. The word muchlat in another context is used to mean permanent. Now, it doesn't really mean permanent. The tzaraas will eventually go away, but we hope. But it could be permanent, meaning it's complete. It's a total tumma. This is the second stage. Muskar is a preliminary stage. Muchlat is a completely decided stage. What do I mean by that? We're going to see as we move along over here that the Kohen examines the suspected Tzaras. The Kohen can make one of three pronouncements. Tahar, meaning he'll look at it and say, this is nothing. But you're not Tahme. You're Tahar. Do whatever you want. I'm sorry that you have a skin disease, but you're not Tahme. That's one pronouncement. Of course, that's what you're hoping he's going to say. Then he could look at it, we just had in this pasuk, and say, Tame, this is Tzaras. You got a blotch of skin, the hair turned white, Tzaras. Muchlat. Total Tzaras. But there's also a pronouncement of, it has the trappings of Tzaras, but it's not complete. And therefore, you are muskar. We're going to lock you up for a week. Doesn't mean with a lock and key. It means you're going to sit in your house for a week. Don't go out of your house for a week. I'll come back in a week and take another look. That's called muskar. Muskar means sogur, closed. He's in his house now for a week. The Kohen comes back at the end of the week and takes a look. And if now the signs of Tzaras are present, now he's Muchlat. If the preliminary signs have disappeared, he's Tahar. Now he goes, now he's done. Or sometimes the Kohen will say, you're still Muskar. Another week. We're going to see that depending on the type of Tzaras, Muskar and Muchlat can go on sometimes for a week, sometimes for 2 weeks, and sometimes for 3 weeks. The stage of Muskar, of there's enough evidence here that I can't say that you're Tahar, but there's not enough for me to say that you're Tameh, that can go on for no more than 3 weeks. And not only that, it depends on the type of Tzaras. Some types of Tzaras only allow for 2 weeks of Muskar, not 3 weeks of Muskar. Some allow for 3 weeks of Muskar. We're going to see as we go along that certain types allow for certain types of things. Let me just make one more explanation, then I'll take your question. The criteria that makes a person Muchlat, meaning complete Tzaras, can change from the from the first time the Kohen looks to a week later or a week later. Meaning the Torah may say that in order for a person to have Tzaras, Muchlat, when the Kohen first comes to see it, it's got to be a blotch of white and it's got to have also hair that turned white. But after a week, or maybe after 2 weeks, the Torah could say at that point, even if the hair didn't turn white, he's mukhlat. Meaning the rules change at the initial stage, and the first week, and the second week, and the third week. The rules can change for where's the threshold between being muskar and being mukhlat, meaning that it becomes more probable that he will become mukhlat as time goes on. In other words, sometimes a person gets the impression with any of these sorts of things, if I wait it out, I'll be okay. As long as it just doesn't get any worse, I'll be okay. But with Tzaraas, it doesn't work that way. Sometimes when it doesn't get worse, he goes from being muskar to being mukhlat. It has to actually get better to avoid moving from muskar to mukhlat. So again, we're going to see as we go along. I want to tell you that let me take a question first, and I'll tell you this last point. Go ahead. He could. There's no need to at that point, but he could.
But he could become mukhlat.
Yeah, but only he can't. It can't happen until the coin comes back.
That's what I mean. During that period,
if he becomes mukhlat, he can't stay in his house.
But the thing is,
no, because he can't stay there. Okay. If he's mukhlat, he has to leave the camp.
Yeah. Okay.
Mukhlat is worse than muskar. It sounds bad enough to be under house arrest, but mukhlat is worse.
So he calls his house.
Well, that's what he would do before he pronounces him as tameh. Yeah. The laws of Tzaraas are counted by Chazal, by our sages, as being of the most complicated in the Torah. When the Gemara wants to invoke subjects that are particularly complex, when it wants to say, this person has such scholarship, he even knows, fill in the blank, so he even knows the rules of Negayim, of Tzaraas. Tzaraas is considered to be so complex that if you're an expert in that, you must be an expert in everything else as well. We, because of the fact that Baruch Hashem, I shouldn't say Baruch Hashem because it has to do with not having the Beis HaMikdash, but we don't practice these rules because we don't get Tzaraas these days, and we therefore also learn the Chumash but don't really have a working knowledge of how it goes. So we're only going to scratch the surface over here with what it says in the Pesukim. So even what we're going to touch on is going to have a level of complexity that will be it's going to be ratcheted up a little bit from what we've had before. There's a little bit of a higher level of complexity in the rules of Tzaraas than the other mitzvot that we've learned about until now. But we're only scratching the surface. So, mitzvah Hashem, in the future, we will become experts in the whole thing. But right now, we're only going to be scratching the surface. So, this, what I'm describing to you now, that the stage where the coin comes initially has one set of rules. When it comes back a week later, there's a new set of rules. Comes back 2 weeks later, there may be another set of rules. So even within the same form of Tzaraas, the rules change as the weeks go on. So what we have so far is where the Kohen pronounces him as mukhlat right off the bat. No muskar stage, immediately stage two. Mukhlat, because there's a blotch of white and the hair has turned white within the blotch. Mukhlat, nothing to talk about. Now the Torah doesn't tell you yet what happens when he's mukhlat. I told you it's right at the camp. The Torah doesn't say that yet because the Torah is still in the middle of explaining different scenarios. Later the Torah will tell us, okay, now you've told me how he becomes a mukhlat, what happens when he's a mukhlat. That'll be later on. Pasuk, Dalet, verse 4. V'bahares levana hi bar besaro. If it is a bahares, that's one of those types that we mentioned before, that's white in the skin of his flesh. V'amok ein mareha min ha'ar. But the white does not look deeper than the skin itself. And not only that, usara lo hafach lavan. The hair did not turn white. So there's a white blotch, and the white blotch is of the whiteness, meaning it has the appearance of tsaras, but it lacks the white hair. Then, v'hiskira kohenes hanega shivas yamim. Then the kohen is hisgir. That's from the word musgar. Hisgir, he closes up the nega, the affliction, for 7 days. Now, he can't close up the affliction for 7 days because the affliction is part of somebody's body. So he can't say, keep your affliction in the house when you go shopping. And that's not going to work. So the person is now going to be stuck in the house for the next 7 days. Now, what happens on the 7th day? V'ra'ohu ha-kohen b'yom ha-shvi. The kohen sees him on the 7th day. V'hinei ha-nega amad b'einav. The nega, the affliction, has remained where it is. Be'enav means that its appearance has remained the same. Lo fasa nega ba'or. It did not spread out in the flesh. V'iskira ha'koin shivas yamim shenis. So the koin will close them up for another 7 days, a second set of 7 days. Now, you can tell from the inference of the Torah that if, in fact, the appearance of the nega has gotten worse, or it has spread, then he's tamei. Then he goes from being musgar to becoming mukhlat. But if it remains the same, it doesn't look any worse, and it has not spread, then he remains musgar, first stage, for another week. So now he'll be musgar for 2 weeks. Then, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, V'ra'a ha'koin ha'so b'yom ha'shvi'i shenis. The koin will see him on the 7th day a second time. So now, this is the second week. V'hinei keha ha'nega. And behold, the affliction has actually gotten lighter. Lighter here meaning, not lighter as in a brighter white. Lighter as in, less. It's a less, keha means fainter, that's a better word for it, not lighter. A more faint color. What do they have they translate here? Dimmed, has dimmed, more faint. The low fasa nega ba'or, and it has not spread on the skin. Then, the tiharo ha-kohen mispachati. The kohen will say it is tar. It is merely a mispachas. Mispachas is a skin disease that appears to be like taras, but it is not tameh. It is tahar. V'chibes b'gadav v'taher. So then what does he have to do? He has to wash his clothing, which means he puts his clothing in the mikvah, and he is tahar. So, says the Torah, after the first week the kohen comes, and the nega looks exactly like it did when he first came, then he remains a muskar. If it got worse, then he's mukhlat. If it got better, he's tar. But right now, it remained exactly the same. When he comes back after the second week, then it's going to have to be that it dimmed and did not spread. But if it did not dim, it just remained the same, then he will go from musgar to mukhlat. So again, if the kohen comes back in the second week and nothing has changed, well, that's not good. That means he becomes a mukhlat. He goes from musgar to mukhlat. After the first week, if nothing changes, he remains a musgar. But after the second week, if nothing changes, he becomes a mukhlat. It has to actually dim in order for him to not become a mukhlat after the second week, and then he would be tahar. Now again, even though the kohen now said he's tahar, still he has to go to the mikvah. When a person becomes a muskar, it is a form of becoming tameh. He is tameh, but he's not a full-fledged tumah. What type of tumah does he have? He is tameh, he has to go to the mikvah. His clothing is tameh, his clothing has to be put in the mikvah. But he's not mukhlat. Mukhlat will require a whole set of rules in order to become tahar. When a person is mukhlat, we will learn in Parashas Mitzora, the next parasha, a very demanding and complex system for going from being tameh to being tahar. The mikvah is not good enough. There's going to be a whole bunch of other things, karbonos, shaving the hair, all kinds of things that have to be done for a person who is mukhlat to becoming tahar. If he was only muskar and he becomes tahar, then all he has to do is go to the mikvah and his clothing has to be put in the mikvah. Now, that is great. However, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, Vim pasos tivseha mispachas ba'or. But if this mispachas again was the word for the blemish that is not saras, but if it then spreads on the skin, acharei heira'o so'el ha-kohen l'tahara'so, after it was shown to the kohen to become tahar, v'nira sheni so'el ha-kohen, and it was shown a second time to the kohen. The kohen has to see it again. So the kohen saw it, and it had become dim, and the kohen said, okay, you are now tahar. But then it spreads. So now it has to be shown to the kohen again. Well, this time, v'ra'ah kohen, the kohen will see it, v'inei pasasa mispachas ba'or, the mispachas has spread on the skin, v'timo ha'kohen, saras hi. The kohen will now say it is tameh, it is saras. So it becomes saras when it comes back. When it comes back again, or when it spreads after being pronounced tahar, and now it spreads, then the person is tahar, and there's no waiting period anymore. He doesn't go back to being a muskar, but rather, he immediately is mukhlat. He goes to the full-fledged tumah of tzaras. Any questions?
So, Rabbi Kransky, you're saying that mispachas is a blemish. It doesn't have to be tzaras. But if it spreads, then it becomes tzaras.
Correct.
So, can you say that when you're in a muskar state that you have a mispachas?
Well,
you're not sure.
Good. You have something which we don't know what it is. We can't call it a mispachas. That's exactly what's trying to be determined over here. Is it a mispachas, which is a tahar type of blemish, or is it se'es, sapachas, which sounds like mispachas, and baharas? Is it one of these other things which is tame? Right. Now again, this is only tzaras that is on the skin, not where there's hair, not where there was a wound or a burn, just regular skin on the body. On the arm, the leg, that sort of thing. That's the type of tzaras that we're talking about right now. We'll get later to the other types of tzaras. Okay, now that's the first paragraph of tzaras. The next paragraph is going to be another form of tzaras, but also on the skin only, and also where there's no hair and no wound and no burn. Just a regular area of flesh on the body, regular area of skin on the body. This next paragraph will cover that as well. Okay. I'm sorry, but my voice is going. I'm sorry. I just can't continue tonight. I apologize.